Progtopia, Year in Review 2017. Progressive greetings, traveler. Welcome to the land of Progtopia, where you hear from all the best artists in the realms of progressive rock, metal, and electronic music, or whatever other styles we feel like shining the spotlight on. I'm Mark Ashby, and I'm your guide on this journey. You can learn more about the show on the web at progtopia.com and follow us at facebook.com/progtopia and at progtopia on Twitter. The show is on iTunes, so if you haven't already subscribed, please do us a favor and give us a rating and review over there. Thanks so much. And now, we're off. 6 years of the show down, and we're still here. Yeah, we're happy to be bringing you insights and interviews from around the world of prog, however you choose to define that word. And while we have some changes in store for the program in the coming year, on which you'll hear more later, it's time to look back on the year that was. We had a couple of planetary premieres and some rock royalty, along with those spotlights being shown on some up-and-comers and friends of the program who were back for their second and even third times. 12 months is a lot to cover, so we'll get right to that. But before we head out, I want to also let you know that you'll also be hearing, in the course of this show every once in a while, the show's awards for the best performances of the year in these categories, not necessarily appearing in this order. Best Newcomer, Best Bass Performance, Best Drums Performance, Best Keyboard Performance, Best Guitar Performance, Best Vocal Performance, Best Song, and Best Album. Often these winners will be among those that appeared on the show this trip around the sun, but not in every case, so you'll just have to keep listening to hear who takes home the prizes. Not that I've got anything cool like a gold statue, but hey, if you like it, put it on your Facebook pages if you're inclined to. Okay, well, here's a quick listen back to the bands and artists that graced your speakers this year on Pugtopia. These are in chronological order, starting the year with Frances Dunnery. Calling all the heroes, shooting up the town boys. Call all the heroes. Jam Karet. Damian Wilson.
The only side I see is your body alone with me. Still we cannot free the fire.
Karnataka. Tom Slatter.
You've nothing to hide. Then why should you be worried? There's a price to be free. We've cleaned our souls by never doing nothing. We get our reward.
Mind Maze. Bobby Kimball.
You're playing your game. This is the show. Everybody knows you're the big that blows the door. They're running your scam. Make your demand. You take that coin out of everybody's hand.
Voyager.
Smile to
Galahad.
I wanna meet you there, share the golden memories, relive the laughs and the jokes that we once shared. I wanna meet you.
Nicholas Waldo. Soul Secret. Prospect. Annie Haslam.
We danced, we once knew the story as autumn called, and we both remembered all those many years ago.
Van Gogh. Anubis Gate. District 97. Iris Devine.
A resurrection from beyond. Yeah, strength from ancient letters. Heal the fractures of my soul. Turning tears to fire. Taking back the fall. Pain is not enough.
And finally, our award winner for Best Newcomer. I Am Warface is a self-described rocktronica quintet out of London, headed by singer-songwriter Matt Warnford, whom I interviewed in episode 120. The band hasn't released an album proper yet, but they've released a lot of singles, and they're promising some more in the months and years to come. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they've got, now that they've shown us what they have, in 2017. Hence, they won the award. Now, the look of their name with those brackets around the I Am and the lowercase letters, that's eye-catching. And so I asked Warnford where that came from.
So, yeah, I called it Warface. Started putting a few things out on Spotify and iTunes. And very quickly realized that my songs were being lost in amongst about four or five other bands called Warface. And all the other bands, Warface bands, they're all mainly kind of, I think there was, there was one that was like really, really kind of hardcore, happy house kind of stuff. Mm. And the other one was like death metal. So I was kind of like, okay, yeah. Need to change the name. It's actually my friend who lives in New York, actually. I was chatting to her and she was saying, hey, you know, I like the name Warface, you know, it's a great name, but, you know, you got to change it. And she just came up, she just said, how about I Am in brackets? Warface, you know, And I was just like, yeah, that's brilliant. You know, it works really, really well. You know, it kind of reminds me a bit of the film I Am Legend as well. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of big. It's quite a big name, isn't it?
So that's one band's story of its naming origin. But what about a through line of symbolism in a band's songs and artwork through their career? That was something that I noticed in the works of Oklahoma-based prog metal trio Van Gogh. Cropping up here, there, and everywhere seemed to be rabbits, whether in song titles or cover art. So in episode 116, where we talked about their new album War Paint, I asked singer, guitarist, and rabbit enthusiast Clay Withrow what that was all about.
I would say the rabbit kind of maybe represents me and my presence on all of our albums. Mm. Like, without just putting my picture on the cover of the album, it's just like a symbol of my presence and of my influence, rather, and how it just continually changes its shape and its color and its mood and all those kind of things, and it just has these different qualities, and a lot of times it's like the rabbit just felt like I never really questioned, like, hey, well, why are we doing this, you know what I mean? I was just like, there's just something that was just pulling me towards, like, I just have to have this on, like, you know, it was just an irrational kind of this feels right, this is gonna be on the cover. And I don't always know exactly why I feel that way. Like, it seems like sometimes at the time I'm just like, well, this has to be here, you know? And I'll look back on it years later and be like, well, I mean, I guess we could have done something different.
And the band called Van Gogh isn't the only time that particular name came up on the show this year. When I was speaking in episode 115 to Renaissance vocalist and queen of classic prog, Annie Haslam, we got talking about her own more recent forays into painting and the visual arts. To hear her tell it, that particular troubled Dutch painter was making his presence felt in her own life and early works.
And I looked at the painting and I thought, okay, what about this painting that is, what is it that's about this painting that looks good or looks like I've done something right? And it was the grass. And that was really where somebody was holding my hand. So what I did is I thought, I'm just going to do a painting of grass. And that's what I did, and I felt this hand on my hand again. The next painting was another one, and I just used red paint on this. It kind of looks like a sunset, a lot of movement in it. But again, I thought, somebody's helping me with this big time. In the sky was like a kind of a light pink and a light blue, but circles. I'm giving you a hint there. So these circles. And then I'm standing in front of the easel, and this little spider comes down in front of me about 6 inches from my face, on a silky skein like this, and it was like a red spider, small spider, and I went, whoa, and closed my blinked, and it disappeared. It was nowhere to be seen, and then my studio filled up with the overwhelming smell of pipe tobacco.
Hmm.
Who do you think that was?
Well, I'm thinking someone who maybe painted swirly sorts of things. Maybe
yeah.
Who
it was Vincent Van Gogh.
I would say missing an ear.
As soon as I smell that smell, and I don't smoke, and there was no smell in that room, and that would be there for like a few months, not all the time. It would come and go.
Changing the order slowly, leaving the mist of time. Fingers are holding fragments of time. Real life, maybe you will find that the past is still turning. Circles sway, echo yesterday, ashes burning, ashes burning.
Inspirations can come from many places, whether ghostly or real, some happy or at least neutral, but often those who create the music we listen to and that touches us the most is born from a much darker place. That's what happened with Anubis Gates guitarist and keyboardist Kim Olesen, back for his third appearance on the show in episode 117. For their newest album, Covered in Black, Olesen channeled his feelings of depression and anxiety into the appropriately named music. And through his and the band's efforts, not only did they allow others to feel they weren't alone, but they also garner a Progtopia Award for 2017 for Best Vocal Performance from singer and bassist Henrik Fehre. He's been due for something like this for a while, so I'm glad I'm doing these awards now. He's a phenomenal vocalist. So congratulations on another triumph of an album, guys. All right, now let's hear what Kim had to say about that connection, about depression, mental illness, that sort of thing, with the band's listeners.
You know, it's difficult here in Denmark, too, you know. And after I came clean, or, you know, after I came out of the closet with my anxiety disorder, I had... You know, many, many people, I was overwhelmed by the amount of people who wrote to me that, oh, I have that too, but I can't talk to anyone about it, you know, because they were afraid it might have consequences on their workplaces and stuff like that. And, you know, my stance on this is that if you have a broken arm, you go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And if you have a broken mind, you also get help, you know, you go to a psychiatrist, because everything in you can get broken, but it can also heal. But you have to do do the things, you have to see someone professional to make it heal. And that was my advice to all those people: get help, because there is help to get, and you can get better.
Looking for ghosts, your mind.
Influences from our youth can often stay with us well into our adult years, and in the case of former Toto singer Bobby Kimball, who was on to promote his solo album We're Not in Kansas Anymore in episode 110, the lessons he learned when he was a boy from an African-American man nicknamed Tanner in their segregated southern hometown have resonated even to this day as he turns 70 years old.
After 3 weeks, I started going to the barbershop once a week, and when he would get off work at 5 o'clock, we would walk up and down the main street. It was very short. Mm-hmm. But the second week I went there, I was looking up above all of the places along the main street, the stores. They had signs that said white entrance, colored entrance, with an arrow pointed to the back.
Right.
And drinking fountains, restrooms, everything had a sign over it. Well, I asked him, I said, Tanner, how do these signs make you feel like you're not a human being or like you are a slave? And he tapped my shoulder and he said, Bobby, please don't take orders from anyone and don't give orders to anyone unless it's police or army.
Yeah.
You know, don't take orders.
Right.
And he said, really, he said, don't spend a moment of your whole life being full of hate or full of anger at anyone or anything. He said, that is a waste of time. He said, but, Bobby, he says, from this very second, right now, until the day you die, he said, spend your whole life doing things that make you the happiest person you could possibly be. And that advice to me made him one of the most important persons in my whole life.
The fear you feel inside will leave you in a moment. Just take the time to believe. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on for a day.
Titling of songs and albums is often a painstaking and even agonizing process for bands to go through. You want to capture the overall feel of what you're going for, and it's even more difficult to contain it within a single word. Yet that's what Pennsylvania's Mind Maze did with their most recent effort called Resolve, which had a track called Drown Me appear to the world first here in a Progtopia planetary premiere in April. Guitarist Jeff Teets explained why that one word wound up being the best representation of the attitude and feeling they were trying to convey.
It's good to hear that people are responding to the title that way, because we kind of agonized over it for a while, actually, because we just weren't, for a long time, we weren't really sure what to call the album, and we were pretty positive that we didn't want to just lift a title from a song, because we wanted something that sort of represented a larger idea. And someone suggested to me that if we wanted to do that, what might be kind of cool is to pick a word that almost has multiple meanings to it. And that's sort of how we arrived at resolve, because the word can, you know, the two main definitions of the word are either, you know, about sort of like, you know, emotional strength and determination, as well as sort of like the conclusion or resolution of something. And both of those definitions, I think, are very, very appropriate for sort of what inspired this album and what was behind a lot of it.
Second planetary premiere this year was in July for three-time Progtopians Soul Secret from Naples, Italy, back with their latest album, Babel, their second concept album in a row following 2015's Four. Keyboardist Luca Di Gennaro, who, by the way, award alert, is the recipient of the Best Keyboard Performance Award this year. Congratulations, Luca. Wonderful work. Luca, he was back on the show to talk about why having the confines of a story is actually liberating for his creativity.
Okay, I love concept, and I think progressive music finds a perfect form in concept albums. I think a concept album is something you reach, and it's really hard to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, once you you write a concept, you will always write concept, because it's so funny and it's so inspirational. Because you write a story, you divide the story in sub-stories, in paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And every paragraph is a song. So, you know, the lyrics will tell a sub-story, and the music will have a certain mood. So it's you put limits to your musical imagination, and it's much more inspirational. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, okay, write a song with just an ukulele and drums. So you start thinking something new.
Right.
Because you have a limit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much more inspirational, at least to me.
I think it's safe to use the word iconoclast when describing Progtopia's first guest of the year, former It Bites frontman but longtime solo artist Francis Dunnery, in episode 105. Dunnery was gearing up for some shows in the UK at the time, and I wanted to talk to him about the risks he's taken in his musical career, particularly the album Made in Space, which could even be described as a soul album, honestly. It's filled with backing vocals and auto-tune. While I personally enjoy it, not every fan feels the same way I do. How does someone like Dunnery deal with that reaction? Well, by doing it anyway, opinions be damned.
As a creative artist, it's vital that you pay attention to your own creativity and not some audience. Because the audience are just going to want what they've already had. People want what they've had, and that's fair enough. I've got nothing to do. I don't care. I'm not making a judgment anywhere, but I'm saying as an artist, you know, as somebody who has to be, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't, I mean, I play stuff from my past all the time. In fact, that's all I do. I haven't done a new record in years.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mean people shouldn't play it or people, but what I'm saying is when you come to do a creative record, like if I didn't do those new things that I do every once in a while, I think I would be deeply regretful now. I think I'd be really sad, like, oh, why didn't I just go and do that record with no guitar, with the voice box?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be thinking that for the rest of my life. And so when I get to the end of my life, which is in 30-odd years, I'm going to sit there. That's the thing when I talk to people who are dying, which I do a lot as a grief counsellor, you know, when I get into that stuff, that's the one thing they say to me all the time. It's not what they did that they regret. Nobody seems to regret what they did. It's what they didn't do.
Some may take it personal for the things that I perceive. I'm an energy essence, baby, manifested in reality. I'm cloaked in all these chemicals, and I'm trying to get free from a physical equation that sinks me to my knees.
I don't know what word might describe UK singer and guitarist Tom Slatter, whose album Happy People was released this spring and who appeared in episode 109, but the title of one of his live performance albums is Discomforting and Overly Whimsical. That's taken from a review of his work. Slatter realizes that what he does resonates with some but not others, and he doesn't mind bad or indifferent reviews. In fact, he's found a use for them.
I like the idea that
I could confuse people. And that definitely turns some people off. Some people don't like it. I've had some hideous reviews, which is fair enough because, you know, people are allowed their opinions. That's cool. Sure. But, you know, it's definitely not to everyone's everyone's taste. In fact, there's a review of one of my EPs that was written by Martin, who does PR for Bad Elephant Music, so the label I'm on. And so the guy who works for my record label said, "This is not everyone's cup of tea," of my music. So, you know,
Martin,
which that's not it. And, yeah, and it's true. It's definitely accurate. But I think that sums it up. And I quite like that. And I take glee, real pleasure in quoting loudly bad reviews.
Might as well, you know, like you say.
Well, you might as well. Well, you know what? Bad reviews are really useful. Because on like social media, if you share a good review, people who like you, they'll click the like and there's no conversation. It's, yeah, that's good. That's cool. If you share a bad review, you get this big, long conversation of all the people who like you coming to your defense. And it's great for your ego. And it's great for like the fan community. You know, so it's always, good reviews, really grateful. Bad reviews, I'm definitely going to share them and we're going to have a talk about them. And the people who like me are going to like me more.
My phone. Before the world turned old, there was a reason.
Next up, our award winner for Best Guitar Performance of the Year. This one goes to Lee Luland of the UK's Prospect, whose stunning sophomore album The Illuminated Sky came out this year. It was inspired by Our Place in the Cosmos, and we featured it in episode 114. Luland's influences do come from the usual places for a progressive metal musician, but he also thinks cinematically when he writes and draws inspiration from there. The result? It's my favorite guitar performance of 2017. Congrats, Lee.
Our sort of prime influences are the sort of the Dream Theaters, the Symphony X's, the Opus and all those sort of guys. But we've got that film score influence. So I guess you could see that it would fit into that sort of genre as well. Mm. But when you sort of put it into the music that we're doing, it has this sort of cinematic element, so it sort of gets that in there as well. So I think they sort of fit together quite nicely, but I guess you could look at it from sort of a different point of view and say that, yeah, without all the guitars and the drums that are going on, if you just sort of orchestrated the stuff and focused a bit more on it, you could have like almost like a film score sort of vibe going on in the theme of it, the whole music and that. It's sort of written that way. It's quite complex.
Collaborations among musicians are a lot of times where some real magic happens. In the case of Chicago's District 97, profiled in episode 118, their highest profile collaboration came from one of the biggest names in Prague, and sadly one we also lost this year, former King Crimson, Asia, and UK bassist and singer John Wetton. Wetton was a champion of District 97's work, as drummer Jonathan Shang explained.
When I was growing up, his work with Crimson and UK was some of my favorite stuff. It was pretty surreal when we got the chance to work with him. He sang on our second album, Trouble with Machines, on a song I wrote called The Perfect Young Man, which is one of our fan favorites. And then when we we toured Europe and the U.S. with him in 2013, playing, as well as The Perfect Young Man. We also played most of the music that he did with King Crimson. And it was the first time he'd sung that material in about 40 years or so.
Wow.
So it was, really an honor to play that with him. And we did release a live album together called One More Red Night. Yeah, it was incredible to work so closely with him and to be able to play behind that singing voice that had meant so much to me previously, and then to actually hear it as it was happening and be able to play off of it was really incredible experience.
Sundown, dazzling day, go through my eyes, but my eyes turned within, only see stars.
What if you're the one being approached for the collaboration? That's where singer Damian Wilson frequently finds himself when he's approached by the many musicians who want his inimitable voice to grace a song or an album. Perhaps surprisingly, he's actually quite open to the idea, as we heard in episode 107.
If there's something draws me to it and I'm available and I can do it, I'll do it. I want to use my voice as much as I can before it goes, you know. I've always wanted to be busy, even in the days when we had exclusive deals, in the early 90s. And, I found it very frustrating to sign yourself exclusively to something because you think, well, you want to be used, that's it. I just want to be used and be able to do some great work. If I can do it, and it's good, I will do it.
All right. Well, how often are you approached for collaborations, I wonder?
Quite a lot, but not enough. Not enough. Okay, bring them to me. I'm always, I prefer to have too much work. I don't like it when I'm, sort of at a loose end. It doesn't tend to happen much, I like to keep busy.
Mm-hmm. Do you say no ever, or is this just your an equal opportunity kind of?
No, I will say no if it's. I mean, but it, if it's for the wrong reasons, I'll say no.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. With the kind of music we do, there tends to be a lot of passion behind what, if people are putting something together, they tend to be quite passionate about it. It's not like they don't tend to be money spinners or,
right.
They're not kind of like get involved in this and you'll get rich,
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
Allow me to take a little pause here before we delve any further, because we need to highlight Progtopia's choice for Best Song of the Year, and I want to play it in its entirety. This track comes from the most recent album of a band who has received Album of the Year from us before, The Murder of My Sweet from Sweden. Their latest album, Echoes of the Aftermath, was released way back in January of 2017, but the closing song from it has stuck with me since then. And although there were many, many worthy contenders this year, ultimately it came down to how the song made me feel when it was over. Do I feel like it took me somewhere? Did it build and change and evolve? Do I feel emotionally connected to it? These are the questions that I ask myself, and maybe you do too. But this was the song that answered all of those critical questions with a yes. So even though they weren't on the show this year, I'd like to recognize The Murder of My Sweet and their excellent song, sung by the vocalist with the appropriately sacred-sounding first name, Angelica Rillin. Here's Inside Outside.
For the times I held you close,
things I can cope. Fool me once, don't fool me twice. All the roads I could have chose, walk the line that hurt the most. I keep telling me I'm fine. No, I'm not. I've barely touched ground. On my way till I'm safe and sound, I pick up the pieces building slow. When I am vulnerable, it shows inside, outside. It's better to love than to have lost. So I live to win no matter cost. It hurts this time, like counting raindrops in the sunshine. Never knew with you around how the emptiness would sound. I'm drowning in my noisy mind, falling fast and falling hard, makes the crash hurt even more. I blame it on my childish heart.
That's why I had to write this sad song.
Okay, back to the recaps. Let's talk improvisation versus structured composition. For California's veteran instrumental group Jam Karet, they might seem on the surface to have much in common with jam bands like Phish or the Grateful Dead, and improv is indeed a main component of what they usually do. Multi-instrumentalist Gail Ellett talked in episode 106 about their most recent album Sonic Celluloid, as well as their earlier work and how improv fits into it.
It's great ear training. It's gives the drummer and bass player a lot of freedom to be on equal footing with the guitars, and it's very enjoyable thing to do. So I play like in 7 different bands. So I play in other bands where we do organized music, and I have an improvised band up here in my town in Topanga called Hillman. So it's a great thing when you can play in an improvised band and in a structured music band, because the whole approach and everything is so totally different. You know, we have albums that are totally improvised, but we have, you know, gobs of albums that are very structured and have the jammy groove. You know, of course we're into strong grooves and soloing, but we're also interested in making evolving compositions where the song from the beginning of the song sounds different than the end, because the song has moved and migrated into another place, which is typical of progressive music and typical of improvised music. But more structured music, generally the beginning and the end of the song are really very similar in mainstream music. And popular music, whether it's heavy metal or rap or anything, it's designed so that you drop the needle anywhere in the song and you get the vibe, you get the gist of what's important, the hook and the main guy singing. It's consistent like throughout the song. But in long form music that's evolving, like classical music or improv or progressive, you know, the composition itself is of a lot of importance, and it's evolving. You know, a lot of music, it seems like the chords underneath are almost irrelevant towards, because it's all important, the soloing over it and the singing over it, and we're trying to make the underlying music be more interesting.
Then there's what might be considered the flip side of that, the technically astounding virtuosos like John Petrucci or Steve Vai, who can string together licks so complex you wonder how their fingers aren't flaming by the end. One of those following in their footsteps is Colombian guitarist Nicolas Waldo, guest on episode 113 to talk about his instrumental album Equilibrium. How often does someone like him have to practice to get that proficient?
In my early years, like guitarist, I practiced six or eight hours each day. But now I have a family. I am married, and I have a baby of 2 years. I hope that he likes the guitar. But he needs time, obviously. But I try to practice 2 hours or more hours if it's necessary. Obviously, working in the most important elements, for example, elasticity, force, sound, stretching.
What are some of the exercises you do when you practice?
Okay, I always practice with metronome, the famous exercises like spider exercises are very interesting and are very, very functional, especially if you need to be fast on the guitar. I practice arpeggios, legatos, tapping, and different combinations between them. Also, improvisation with different backing tracks, for example, jazz backing tracks, blues backing tracks, country, metal, is the idea. We'll be right back.
could have easily given out all sorts of awards for the next group featured here, but I've kept it to just one. The Best Bass Performance Award this year will go to Alex Canyon of the amazing Aussies Voyager. Just love them. Their album Ghost Mile is probably their best yet for my money, and boy did it give a run at Album of the Year for me. And Canyon's bass has a lot to do with the success of the album and their music in general. He says humbly that skill might be involved a little bit, but circumstances have a lot to do with the prominence given to the bass lines in Voyager's music, as we heard in episode 111.
I had some pretty complex kind of bass lines going in there, and then this is what happens. I'll write a really complicated part, and Daniel throw me a vocal part. And in this instance, he said, oh, can you sing the chorus to this? So I had to abandon the really over-the-top bass line for it to focus on how I was going to actually sing and play it at the same time.
Yeah,
that's I think the added benefits of where I've struck gold here as being a bass player in a metal band is that the producer of the album, Matt Templeman, he's actually a really good bass player in his own right, and he plays in another band with Scott. And he plays a lot of slap bass himself. And the guy that mastered the album is also a bass player. So I feel like I'm really on the winning side here. But it's just really become a part of the Voyager sound now, the whole percussive thing. And honestly, I'm just a little bit selfish about it. I get bored really, really easy. So I need something at least a little bit challenging or a little bit interesting.
Live performances, it's common for artists over the years to alter the way certain songs are presented, but in the case of Galahad and their singer Stu Nicholson, heard from in episode 112, they did most of an album that way. Entitled Quiet Storms and released this year, it featured some new but many updated tracks in stripped-down, largely keyboard and vocal form. This is something Nicholson finds familiar, comforting, and worthwhile.
I do like reimagining stuff, actually. I like the way that some other artists do the same thing. I mean, you know, Peter Gabriel is a prime example. He does a similar thing to us, you know, with albums with orchestras and things, and not using rock bands, and then weird recording techniques, not using cymbals, and of course Here Comes the Flood. You've got the big sort of orchestrated version on the first album, and then most of the live shows that he does these days is just him and a piano. I just love that. It sends shivers down my spine, every time I've seen Peter do "Here Comes the Flood" live, it's just I just love it, and the sort of spine tingling moments, so really we just wanted to do things like that, and also some of the early recordings of some of the older songs, I must admit, I've never been that happy with, because obviously back in the day we didn't have much money, we didn't have a lot of experience, and some of the recordings, you know, although they're okay, they sort of sound a bit thin and a bit of their time, I suppose you could say. And working with Carl Groom is great, because he's just such a good producer, and the quality of his recording, and it sounds, you know, he can make a band sound very kind of proggy or rocky or whatever, but it also sounds very modern, very crisp. And I do like his production technique. So that's why, for example, on the 30th anniversary album, we basically went back and reworked some of our favourite songs, some of our favourite Galahad songs.
I'm just thinking, beyond the barbed wire, I'm just looking, beyond the cold barbed wire. Just thinking, beyond the barbed wire, I'm just looking,
on the cold barbed wire. I'm just
in the life of any band that experiences longevity, there comes at least one time, maybe more, when a break is needed. Indeed, that currently seems to be the case for Carnatica, whose bassist and songwriter Ian Jones was our guest in episode 108, as Jones is taking time away to work on his other projects, Chasing the Monsoon and Illumini. But it wasn't at the time we did the show, and early this year we talked about the band's first hiatus and the reasons for it.
I mean, it wasn't deliberate. I'd started writing again with Gonzalo Carrera, a London-based keyboard player from Spain originally. Fabulous player. I was still living in Swansea at the time. And really, we just started writing, you know, no plans, you know, even to make it into a band. It was just to do something musical at the time. But when we did start writing and started getting the ideas down, immediately it had very much a Carnatica vibe. I'd started working with another female vocalist, Lisa Fury, at the time, because we'd just started another project called Chasing the Monsoon. And I think one thing kind of just led to another, that the more music we could produce, you know, the more it sounded like Carnatica. You know, I'd always been one of the main writers anyway with the band. You know, I kind of started the whole thing anyway. So I thought, well, why not, you know? I think if I hadn't been, you know, one of the main writers or, you know, key to the sound, then I don't think I could have justified it. But I felt I could, you know, and it was really a case of putting my money where my mouth was, you know, when we released, you know, the first album with the new lineup. But, you know, it's the fans have more than accepted it. We moved on.
You're still living in the past, trapped in time, the circle pass. Turn my back on your mistakes, leave it to your chosen space. Bound, am I left stormbound? My world's turning upside down. Take this chance, dreams are meant for living.
Our final interview clip comes from episode 119 and the power trio that spread between Virginia and Colorado, Iris Divine. Drummer Chris Combs was on the show to talk about the band's second album, The Static and the Noise, and I had noticed both in interactions on social media and even when I got to see the band live that he and guitarist and singer Naveed Rashid have a very, let's call it, unique relationship. So I asked him about that, and I'd also like to let him and you all know that Chris is the winner of Best Drum Performance of the Year for some smashing work on the new album. It's sometimes subtle, it's sometimes blasting, but every time it's always appropriate to the song. So well done, sir. Okay, now what about that Naveed guy?
We very much so have kind of the mom and dad kind of mentality, and we both wear the different hats. But to me, it's my defense mechanism when I feel like I'm being a little, I don't want to say micromanaged, but just managed in general. So I'll kind of go up to him and either, hypothetically or actually physically just kind of push him around a little bit just because he has a lot of strong opinions, which is awesome. But sometimes him and I rub each other the wrong way and I'll just come out with some kind of really insane way of catching him off guard. So he has to stop and laugh at himself and then kind of regroup. But yeah, I never have a problem throwing him under the bus because he knows that I love him at the end of the day. And to me, the relationship that him and I have is better than any relationship I've had in any other band with anybody else. Uh-huh. And I think it's because of that. We have such a different personality and a different understanding of music and the way we approach music and even in our influences. So he's like the traditional thrash metal guy that loves Taylor Swift. And I'm the moody prog guy like Mars Volta or whatever, but I'm also listening to Hooverphonic in my house. So we're okay. So far removed from each other in our core values, but we also understand the real Prague Dream Theater Tool kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think when you take how different the musical atmosphere is and apply it into our lives, because that's how different we are. Like, he's Captain Food Guy, and I hate thinking about food. It's a necessity. Feed me, get me out of the way. And we're vice versa with computers. He hates computers. He can't stand them. They're just a necessity. And I'm over there, you know, I'm a web developer. So when you put all the opposite stuff in our face, we just like to laugh at it.
So that does it for those who were kind enough to be on the program this year. And to them all, I extend my sincere thanks for another wonderful 12 months of programming. I really do appreciate you sharing your time and your music, because without that, there's no show. So before our final award for Album of the Year is given out, I wanted to let those of you know that hadn't already heard or read the news on our Facebook and Twitter pages that, in an effort to keep the show fresh and engaging, Progtopia is going to have a bit of a facelift in 2018. There will still be interviews and music, don't worry, but there will also be contributions from other prog journalists, musicians, label bosses, and fans who will be sharing their reviews, opinions, and even roundtable discussions, as you may have heard on our sister podcast, The Prog Squad. The goal is to expand the offerings the show is able to bring you while still maintaining and even improving the quality of what you'll hear. Plans are already in motion for the first program with the new format, so if you want to keep up with what's happening before that drops, I encourage you, if you don't already, to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and you'll be in the loop. Bands, we want to hear from you too. You got an album you want to promote in a short soundbite? Well, you'll have your chance in our 30-second sales pitches. If you've listened to the Prog Squad, you know what those are, but instead of us panelists delivering a short soundbite about albums that we like, we want the bands themselves to do so. Our brand new email address for getting in touch about that and anything else show-related is simple. info@progtopia.com. Really hard to remember, right? I'll say it again. info@progtopia.com. And now, the Progtopia Album of the Year, 2017. I can't begin to tell you all how much I needed this album at this time. I have been a fan of this group for 3 decades, since I was about 14 or 15 years old. Although they've been around much longer even than that. I've seen them in concert 5 times. I wanted to see them one other time, but a little thing called 9/11 kind of interrupted that. They've been the soundtrack to a lot of important times in my life. Certain eras appeal to me more than others, but they've always been there. And that's why, when Tangerine Dream's founding member and maestro, Edgar Froese, suddenly passed away in January 2015, I was devastated, not only for the loss of such a major influence and creator of so much of the music that I love, but I felt the band he'd founded now would surely be over. And lots of the band's fans believed that it should be, that continuing would somehow tarnish the legacy of what Edgar had achieved over nearly 50 years. So yeah, I was worried. I didn't know where remaining members Torsten Kveschning, Ulrich Schnaus, and Hoshiko Yamane would take it. I had my doubts, and I had mixed feelings too. But Edgar had left behind some song sketches, and these were reworked and expanded upon over the next couple of years. The culmination of that work was the long-awaited Quantum Gate, released on September 29th, also the 50th anniversary of the band's founding. So I was not only relieved to hear that it was indeed representative of the Tangerine Dream music I'd come to love so much, but also that I'd have to consider it their best release since I became a fan in 1988. If you know how many albums they've released since then, that's really saying something. My favorite era of the band is unquestionably that early to mid-80s when Johannes Schmeling and Chris Franke were also members. And this is every bit as good as that.
It's a fitting send-off to Edgar and all that he imagined the band was and could be had he been able to remain at this particular so-called cosmic address to realize it. And so, as I leave you and wish you all the best for 2018, I'm thrilled to send off the final show of 2017 with the last portion of the opening track from Progtopia's album of the year, Tangerine Dream's Quantum Gate. This is from the 13.5-minute Sensing Elements. Thank you, Tangerine Dream. Thank you, guests. And thank you all in the audience for listening. We'll see you next year in a land called Progtopia.